This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
All right, everyone. Nurturing our nature. So I grew up in Los Angeles, born and raised, and returned back to it many years ago. I'd been abroad and lived different places, but eventually came back. And, grew up very city in the way that I lived in Los Angeles, then I lived in Tokyo, then I lived in New York, came back to Los Angeles. And all the while, having this nature girl inside of me, desperate to find her roots, if you will. And yes, there's so much beauty in, you can go 15 minutes out of the way in Los Angeles and you're in the mountains, or 25 minutes you're at the ocean, depending on where you are, all of that. But really what was happening in my life was that, and why I'm so devoted to this practice and sharing it with others, is feeling this sense of disconnection and feeling the encroachment of the modern way of living, and especially the computers and the smartphones. And all of a sudden it was like, wait, where's my spaciousness? Where's my time in nature? And everything felt so justifiable in the way of, we live in a culture that is very productive oriented, you know, do, do, do. And really coming back to this initial practice of, we are human beings, not human doings. And so what does that mean to be? And when I come back to nature, because I teach, I give different retreats for primarily women, nature-based retreats. I've been doing that for almost 10 years now. And to be in silence with wisdom practices in nature, and having that time of spaciousness, and having that relationship of my nature be nurtured, is what really drew me into nature practices. And I fought it. I had a revved up nervous system from being a city girl. My mother was very much more, she was the heart of nature. She was from Montana, and she really brought me back into that when I would come and visit her. She lived in a really pretty town in Northern California. But just noticing that revved up, like getting so revved up with being and doing and gotta go, and then getting accolades or a pat on the back. You think about just even the basic ways that we communicate to each other. How are you doing? Like doing instead of how are you? Like, how are you doing? What have you been up to? What are you doing? You know, and, oh, I'm good. I'm doing this. And just constantly having to reinforce this doing. And this kind of preoccupation and busyness. And there is definitely a place for it. But it's more that when we're doing it unconsciously and it's out of habit versus intention and connection. And so this is where nature helps me to come back into balance. And I would say where we are as a species is we're really facing these tumultuous, tender times in a way of recognizing our disconnection or connection. And are we nurturing our nature that is really at the root compassionate, kind, collaborative, creative, or are we nurturing something that is more primitive, survival-based, which is to get, to grasp, to hold on, to push, to separate? This is what we get to ask ourselves, in the way that what am I paying attention to grows? What am I focusing on? Because what I focus on expands. So am I sensing into the connection in the way that I'm relational by nature, or the disconnection in the way that I'm caught in that trance of separation? And if we look at the ecosystem any ecosystem that you look out and you'll see that a tree's not fighting in the way of, it doesn't mean that they're not finding ways to adjust, but that a tree is in relationship to the birds. The birds are in relationship to the pond. The pond is in relationship to the fish. That there is this presencing and this way of being that I think that nature has a lot to teach us. I want to read you this poem. This is by Kaveri Patel. She's a doctor of osteopathic medicine and also a mindfulness teacher and a poet. She says, "Dear you, you who always have so many things to do, so many places to be, your mind spinning like fan blades at high speed, each moment always a blur because you're never still. I know you're tired. I also know it's not your fault. The constant brain buzz is like a swarm of bees threatening to sting you if you close your eyes. You have forgotten something again, and you need to prepare for that or else. You should have done that differently. What if you closed your eyes? Would the world fall apart without you? Or would your mind become the open sky, flock of thoughts flying across the sunrise as you just watched and smiled?" So this spinning that can happen inside of us with worry, with to-dos lists, with shoulds, with rumination in the past, with the catastrophizing in the future, and this spinning in the way of this preoccupation, what would it be like to slow down and to soften? What would it be like to allow it, to observe it, but to give it more spaciousness so that it's not dominating? So it's not consuming and taking over. And this is what our practice of meditation can give us, informally and formally. So the formally is when we're being with periods of stillness, periods of concentration or natural awareness, however we're working with attention. And then informally, it's how we're living in our life daily. And I had this, actually this therapist many, many years ago used this metaphor, and I really appreciate it. She said, you can think of life as like, almost like a case that you're gathering evidence for. So it's either a case for love, for connection, for hope, for peace. And you're like, oh yeah, here's evidence. And I'm gathering all that evidence. Or it's for lack of hope, fear, disillusionment, separation, shame, anger, blame. It really is that we have the choice to say, what am I gathering? And it doesn't mean that we're being Pollyanna. It doesn't mean that we're not being realistic. But it does mean that when we look at science and the way that we're placing our attention, what we pay attention to literally grows. We start noticing it more, right? If we're noticing a sense of connection, like my intention is to find, where do I belong? Where am I more alike? Where am I fitting in? Where is that sense of companion or kinship? I'm open to looking for that today. We're more likely to feel it and connect to it than the other, which is, this world is harsh, it doesn't make sense. And there's plenty of times in my life where I've said, what? I think I got off on the wrong stop. I'm like, this is not my place. I don't know what's going on here, but I am just too sensitive for this shit. It's just too hard. People are, I just, the sense of harm that is caused because of harm, and that was caused, right? This, not the, our lack of ability to meet unmet pain is just constantly creating more. So we can interrupt this. We can interrupt this by being present in our own lives and saying, how can I slow this fan down? How can I slow what's happening down just a little bit? And for me, that's connecting to nature. When I go out into nature, even if it's just sitting on my balcony and I just, or even from my office, I'll open my windows and I'll just hear the birds. And that's that moment to retrieve me back into connection versus the disconnection. And then where else can I notice the intention to connect? I'm going to read you also. You know, this is a time that we can really question a lot. Like, what is happening? Where is the wisdom? Where's the ethics? Where is the compassion, the heart, and a lot of what we're seeing right now, which for many different people, this has always been there and has been the underbelly that's getting more of a spotlight in many ways. And so this is by Gina Pororo, and she's the author and a poet of the book, The Wild Will Call You Back. So she says, let me be an apprentice to stillness. Let me be an open vessel filling with the vastness of each moment, overflowing with every loving, grieving, lustful, painful, ecstatic, aching, raw sensation. Moments that birth and die, contract and expand, arise and dissolve. Let me embody exquisite gentleness and the strength to soften with my tendrils stretched wide, shimmering in receptivity. Let me breathe into each question without ever needing to know the answer. So this is pretty radical, right? Like, to be able to meet the moment and that moment and to sit with it, to be in stillness, meaning without being in distraction. How many of us are being preyed upon to stay distracted? You know, consumerism is very much preying on the fact of staying distracted, which distraction can help us feel disconnected from ourselves, from each other. So I love this line as far as the moments that birth, that die, contract, evolve, arise, and dissolve. This is the natural rhythm of life. This is what nature reveals to us. But what about the times we're like, I don't want it to contract. I want it to expand, or we're resisting what is. This is where that sense of suffering can come from. If we look at mindfulness as this practice of allowing the truth of what is in this moment, but how do we meet the moment? The invitation is to meet it with an undefended heart. What if our heart was wise enough, big enough, strong enough to be able to feel it and hold it all? As opposed to our mind that can get overwhelmed and burdened and judgmental and go into, we're storytellers. We can go into pretty scary stories. All of these different experiences, what if we can drop down into our heart and be able to breathe into what is here moment to moment? For me, this has taken years to practice, this loving awareness, in the way that dropping down into my body, especially when I have a trauma background, it wasn't safe to be in my body. I was a place to avoid, to run from. So to be still felt like a threat. And so I did different other practices to work with that. And then I slowly started to learn that I can meet my experience just like the weather. It's not always going to rain. It's not always going to be sunny. It's not always going to be thundering. It's not always going to be snow. This is the impermanence that helps us to stay in a sense of curiosity. So before I open up to the group, there's a wonderful teacher, Dr. Rochelle Calvert, and she focuses, she's a mindfulness teacher, and she does nature-based experiences as well. And she says, being rooted and grounded can also be felt as ecological and relational. To be grounded is to remember that we are not separate from the living world. We are bodies of the earth. So what I'd like to invite as far as a conversation here is, what does nature mean to you? Just taking it a moment right now, just contemplating, what does nature mean to you? Maybe it's an image that comes to mind. Maybe it's a sound, a color, a favorite place. And if you wouldn't mind, you can place it in the chat. We can just start to see, what does nature mean? And there's no right or wrong answers. And it could be just what it means to you right now in this moment. Nature is my home and my kin. Beautiful. Nature is my spiritual playground. Love it. Large oak trees on my walk. Nature can help me realize my human problems might not be that big. My tree on my property I named grandfather. Oh, I love these. Nature is the lovely biosphere we call home. Where the wind gently blows my hair out of my face, that earth is loving me. Spaciousness and freedom. I'm rereading C. Lewis, Mere Christianity. He speaks of human nature. Nature is everything outside that is not made by humans. Very long, cold winter in the Northwest makes me appreciate spring rebirth so much. Absolutely. In LA, we have like 1.5 seasons. No, I'm just kidding. But we don't have, I really miss living on the East Coast with the seasons. But just notice what it feels like that we're orienting our attention to nature. And maybe some of us is like, I don't know, it kind of makes me nervous. I don't get out enough. Or maybe the times I have gotten out, it just seems dirty or too much work or whatever, right? There's no right or wrong, truly. Nature puts things into perspective where I am small and the world around me has so much to discover and admire. Nature is peace, bodies of water with birds. Let's see, like bugs, right? Yeah. We got bugs. Yeah. So what does, as we keep going, I need to remind myself, you can enjoy nature without being a hardcore adventurer, right? Yeah, I know. I like being a hardcore adventurer, but it can be so much softer and subtler. Yeah, beautiful. So just noticing how we're orienting ourselves to nature. What does nature inside of you mean? What is your nature within? What do you notice that can be reflective of nature outside reflecting the nature within. Nature is healing, yes. Nature gives me strength, lets me know everything will be okay and I am safe. So, what is this innate nature? What is your nature inside? What does these things that you can see outside, can they be a reflection of inside? Can it be this relational experience that there's no separation? Nature is all encompassing and whole, right? Which can be a reflection that that is actually who we are. It's not just nature's not just a backdrop, but can it be mirroring the truth of who we are? And that this relationship, well, maybe we're not aware of it, is the truth that is exists without our awareness. But what would it be like to connect more to it? And this could be just in a meditation, imagining being, in a beautiful field, a meadow. This could be imagining a beautiful mountain. I think of nature as well as this, again, some of you have said, this place of safety, of connection. So, can that be within us, this place of peace and ease? This place of incredible strength and resilience and awe. Yeah, it's grounding. Nature inside of me is all the things that just happen without my effort, my heartbeat, my breath, cell growth, digestion. Exactly, Debbie. So here, this is a natural rhythm that's happening. But what can interrupt that natural rhythm? Is the over-identification of the mind. That we become over-identified to our thoughts, that we become entangled with them. And then we can start to separate from this relationship of our own nature. That we don't have to micromanage our heartbeat. We don't have to, for most of us, maybe there's some that are different, but we don't have to micromanage. Our blood coming through, our cells growing. We don't have to think this to happen. This is just happening naturally. The awesomeness of our bodies that know how to be in rhythm, to know how to generate, to know how to be resilient. So then I'll ask you this, is there any part right now within you or your practice that you feel that you are not in flow with? So in flow can be, I feel stuck. I feel stuck. I don't feel a sense of ease, or I feel preoccupied, or I mean, these can be current events. These can be certain relationships. This can be our own health. And then this is where we're going to focus more on that nurturing. What is our nature of health? What is our nature of love? What is our nature of our mind to actually be quiet? That there can be an uninterrupted place within us that knows how to be still. And maybe that stillness is 1 minute, but it's still what we pay attention to grows. So if anyone would like to, you can ask a question, you can come off your mute as well, or you can just put in here, maybe we can name some areas that we are feeling that we are kind of working against our nature. Not in flow with our own nature. I know I'll give you an example for me that I've had some health challenges on and off for many years with autoimmune. We know that adverse experiences starting very young in life can really impact your health later in life. And I grew up with some very significant challenges. And so it's my body knew that it needed to stay alert. It needed to be hypervigilant. It needed to, and it didn't know how to turn off until I started practicing in a way that I could be even aware that that was happening, that I was constantly in a survival response. So I was interrupting the flow of my body, knowing its own sense of safety or safe enough. That even like that perpetual state of worry and control, and that was actually interrupting my place of ease and rest. So I see outside life, work, relationships keeps us on rapid transit bus where we are missing out on nature and our own nature. I try to stop and feel awe in looking at the sky, a pretty flower, but it's hard. Yeah, so this is where it's a practice, right? One practice that I do, and I'm pretty diligent about, is that I literally stop and smell the flowers. And I might be in places that I don't really want to stop, or I don't have the time to stop, or whatever, but if I see a rose, I'm going to stop and I'm going to smell it. And then I try to, my deep practice is really smell it. So it's not like I got to smell the rose, got to deny it on one thing, but like really pause and smell. Really pause and take in that moment. Stop with those horizon eyes and look out into the sky and be with what I see instead of, okay, done that, check that, next. Oh, good. I love that, Samantha, so you do too. Emotions hijack my equanimity, absolutely. And it's interesting about emotions because emotions can be really prediction of past experiences into the present. And that familiarity, that's like, ooh, wait, this is something that I experienced before, can ignite that because we have these memory capsules in our body that store our experience. And then, if we aren't aware and haven't really tended to that part of our body, then or our experience, then it can be something that is hijacked in the way because it's more historical. It's young, is the way that I kind of look at it. It's something that just didn't pop out of nowhere, but that's probably been there for a while. I actually want to read you about emotions because I think that's part of our nature. But yet, our minds can really interrupt the flow of an emotion because we know with neuroscience that that emotion can be 90 seconds. It has that charge in the nervous system and then release. But then why does it stay longer? Because of the stories, because of the thoughts. How are we paying attention to it in a way that's keeping it growing. So, if we can look at emotions that are signals, but not that they're not obstacles, that they carry messages about what we need. So, what is our emotion? Is if it's a messenger, what is it trying to let us know? And how do we keep our heart open? How can we be curious and observe and have a willingness to be with it without going into that survival reaction, which is feeling that hijacked? That hijacked is more now we're in a place of a fight or flight response or a freeze and flee, you know, the freeze and appease response. So I love that Tara Brach says emotions are not problems to solve, they're messengers to listen to. What if these are just visitors that come and go, but that we need some attending to it because it's gotten to a place that it's literally a stress response in that sense of hijacking? I'm just going to go back to paradoxically, sometimes being too still can be distracting. Oh, I like that. That's interesting. I'd like to hear more about that. Who is that? Is it Marie Lena? If you wanted to come off mute, we could talk a little about that. I'm curious what that means. Otherwise, I'll go on to the next. Now that it is finally getting warmer, I am trying to meditate outside more. The birds are making so much noise. Absolutely. And that can be our anchor for our wandering mind, right? To come back to and let see how our relationship to the sound is. I made a vow to never take the mountains for granted when I lived in LA for a year. Every day I paused and experienced that miracle. Especially for a Floridian, right, where there's kind of flat. It was magical and appreciative every day. That's beautiful. Nature makes me slow down and really appreciate. So if we look at our emotions as part of our nature, it's really how we're relating to them. And so there's some emotions that we are pretty good with and we are like, oh, that's okay. And then there's some that are like, no, 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 I don't want that emotion. Okay, I just had vocal cord surgery. Oh my goodness. So I can't talk for a few days. What I meant is that sometimes total silence can be distracting because thoughts tend to fill up the silence. Ah, does that make more sense? Yes, well, good, you know, I hope that you're taking good care of yourself and that the surgery is recovery is going well. And yes, that absolutely makes sense. So when we are in total silence, then we don't have the distraction, right? So then we're able to really be with what is. But then sometimes our minds can say, well, we got to give something to do here. So we're going to have a lot of thoughts, right? Because we're used to being busy or doing. So we can notice it as a distraction, or we can just notice it as phenomenon. Thinking, we just note it. Thoughts, we just note it. And we still stay in relationship to allow it to be here. Because, for example, if I were to say to all of you, whatever you do right now, no matter what, do not think of a zebra. And then I start to see the smiles. Because then you're like, zebra, 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 right? So what we resist persists. So if we give it the spaciousness to thoughts, just like I wouldn't ask you with your lungs, stop breathing. I'm not going to ask you with your mind, stop thinking, right? We don't need to create that friction and resistance. Ironically, if we say yes to thoughts, then we can actually notice the spaces in between thoughts. We can actually notice how they begin to shift. But I'm still curious about the emotions and the way that they can be messengers. I understand emotions as a tool with which we can labor our bodily sensations, make sense of them, so to speak. Yeah. So emotions are body-based, right? They're emotions. They're energy in motion. So we might not be able to name anger, sadness, grief, despair, but we can notice warmth, tension, tightness. And when we're coming from a place where we're being curious about a willingness to turn toward our experience, not to change it, to fix it, to control it, to judge it, but really turn to what is here, that willingness to be with it, and if we can sense into it, and we can even listen to it, that can allow this real sense of connection. And it can allow to whatever to be here, the space to be here. As opposed to, I know for me, because I felt unsafe and there was, you know, active alcoholism in my childhood and untreated codependency and different things, So it was, I really wanted to control my life, my experience. But with the intention to control, I was actually controlled by my mind. So it's when we can observe and become that wise witness with that loving awareness and say, what if this belongs? What if this thought belongs? Then that kind of tug of war starts to release. So what if we can allow what is here for the moment, recognizing impermanence? Yeah. Any other thoughts or anything else anyone wants to bring up or share? Or question? Otherwise, I'm going to take us into an ending practice. Okay. So why don't we, if you're able to get into that posture that is both supportive and alert. So this can be lying down, this can be seated, standing, whatever you'd like. This can be walking slowly. It's really just something that's inviting you to be with your experience. So if we're sitting or we're in a position that is not, it's kind of working against our experience, then we can shift it, we can modify. So really take care of yourself. What would it be like for you to just give in to the posture that you've chosen, just like 20% more? So if you're seated here, what if you just gave in to 20% more of really seating in, just settling into where you are? Again, you can tune in to your body in the way metaphorically, like a tree, in the sense that sense of grounding. What does groundedness feel like in this moment? If we're kind of spinning and we're up in our head with a lot of thoughts, we might not feel as grounded. So, what would it be like to just orient yourself down to your feet or your lower part of your body? Slowly exploring sensation, noticing tingling, warmth, coolness, whatever you're aware of. Nothing to figure out, to solve. But softly surrender into just feeling the earth below you. And scanning your awareness into your legs, into your sit bones, up into your torso. And how about over to that heart center, this beautiful place that knows sorrow, that knows joy, that knows wisdom, that literally has neurons, so intelligence. And what if this wise, incredible heart has something to share with you? Just sweetly in this moment, just turning towards the listening. Recognizing the nature of love, the nature of compassion. Our natural state. A natural state of connection, the ability to love, to care, to receive love, to care. What if we can allow that just even more, like maybe 5% more expansion of openness? What would that be like? And if it's guarded and protected, can we acknowledge that with no judgment? If we keep going to our mind, can we acknowledge that with no judgment? It can be helpful to place a hand or both on your heart as a way to sense into what is here. And for this last part, just naming to yourself in your mind's eye, what do you love about nature? Sensing into all the things that have been shared so far. And recognizing this connection of your own nature, can you turn towards your own nature? What do you love and appreciate about yourself? And then noticing, opening your consciousness to the group, this loving community that has the willingness and the courage to sit with themselves, to be present, to be with what is in community. Just noticing that sense of connection or inviting that sense of belonging. And now imagine it reverberating out, expanding out, radiating out all into the room that you're in, into the space that you're in, out into beyond the space that you're in, out into the sky, almost like sending out this glowing, loving awareness. As it connects to the trees, to the animals, to the sky, to this beautiful earth, radiating out from your heart and then receiving back that we are relational beings so that we can receive this relationship. And then just to end in a way that we dedicate this practice to benefit all beings. May we be safe. May we be cared for. May we have enough. May we have shelter. May we feel a sense of belonging. May we know we are loved and cared for. May all beings feel this. May all beings have safety, protection, and a sense of connection. And then gently letting that go. And coming back. Just noticing what that feels like to have practiced that loving metta practice. Is sending and receiving. So I put my website in there. It's Healing with Mindfulness. And also Serena put mindful offerings that we have with UCLA Mindful. So there's a link there for upcoming things. I wish you all well. Thank you so much for this time, for this practice. We love Diana. There's no way I can replace her, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to sub for her. And thank you all very much. Have a beautiful rest of your night or day, wherever you're coming from.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.